98.4 Capital FM. In studio with us this morning, the enigmatic luminary that is Janet Mbugua. She said, how are you going to introduce me? So there you go.
Oh, wow. No. I was not expecting that. She's like, that's a lie.
No, I actually would rather, before you came in, Fareed told me the story about the... Please tell that story.
Janet and I have presented two events live on TV. The first was KTN's presenter. And the second one was an award ceremony called the Millennium Awards for Excellence. So the events company and production house was a company called Cap Events from South Africa. So they had all the voiceovers. So when you and now, ladies and gentlemen, your hosts, Fareed Kimani and Janet Mbugua. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
She was so upset.
My name has been butchered over the years.
Mbugua.
Because I've worked in South Africa and been in different spaces. And it's butchered, you know, and then eventually you just say... before the show, I'm like, could I just let you know how to pronounce
it's,
my name?
I'm pretty so sure that my dad isn't mad difficult. At me. How often is your dad mad at you?
Yeah. Not often. My dad and I are pretty close.
Okay,
with
good.
My folks. Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
All right, Janet Mbugua. Mbugua, thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
It's been some time.
Yeah, it has.
Since your first show.
I know.
At just 19. How did you get... At 19.
Were you 19 when you joined here?
I was 19.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Who does that? Only a chick who can be so successful. Oh, yeah, 19. Meanwhile, we were sleeping.
Straight onto primetime news, right?
At 19. As one does.
You were there with me at 19.
Yeah.
First of all, for some reason, when I saw the 25th year anniversary, I don't know why I got emotional.
But you're one of the early days, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, this was what 2001,
2003. Yeah,
that's quite early on, you know.
Before you two start telling stories about the good old days, I will interrupt. Janet, do my work for me. You define yourself, please.
I define myself. You know, when you said moments ago, that's how we'd start. I was just thinking when I was out there, it's taken me a really long time, I think, to self-actualize. Mm-hmm. A very long time. I thought I had it figured out. I thought I knew myself. I thought I could define myself easily. Did not. It was a very complex journey. And I think it's more recently, I've just come home to myself in a sense where I'm not so, I think, afraid to put myself out there or afraid to stand for the things I believe in, because it just bugged me for the longest time. So how would I define myself? I think I'm just open to seeing people. I like seeing people be the best versions of themselves. And within that, I also need to protect my peace and be kind to myself. I'm sure I haven't answered the question. I'll answer at the end of the show, I promise.
No. You have
answered it.
This is the thing with Women Crush Wednesdays. I think we're calling it that. But a lot of these powerful women that we've brought in, they say these huge, huge gems. And you're like... Yes, that's what I've been thinking.
Yeah, did you just write them down? And when people ask you, you're like, it's taken me a long time to self-actualize. And
I get Alex to transcribe it, and then I learn it. I wrote learn it, and I'm like, tomorrow I'm going to be fire.
Please,
on the show.
Can someone ask me to describe myself? You know, you talk about you self-actualization that comes with a sort of a confident sense of self.
Yeah.
Someone who feels that, you know, they're the best version of themselves now, which I assume you do. And I would say, you know, since I've known you, since you were 19, which I didn't know you were 19, I've always found you to be a very strong, confident woman. And yet, I mean, clearly that journey hasn't been as straightforward as many may think.
Not really. I think what helped was, again, being brought up in a sense that you can be who you want to be. I know it sounds cliche, but my folks were pretty much like, as if you want to be an astronaut or an engineer or an actor, whatever it is, just put the work in. So it was nice to be allowed to kind of like go for the things I wanted. That was the element of confidence, but the rest wasn't really there.
But do you think that it's something to do with generationally? Like, I think rather than an age thing, actually, because I think, give me your hardest decade. Was it your teens?
Wow.
Was it your 20s?
It was actually my 20s.
How? Why?
I think I just was navigating a lot of personal issues and trauma. I would say actually mid-20 to mid-30s was tough when I was doing the best in my career.
Interesting.
So my career almost cushioned me and allowed me to find some sense of healing and rhythm. But then there was so much that I was putting under rug swept and I wasn't confronting. And then during the pandemic, I was like, okay, let's have a meeting with myself. So I put my sons to bed, journal, glass of wine, and spent 3 hours confronting my toxic traits or my traumas, and came out of that saying, this one needs therapy, this one I need to owe an apology. It just really helped. So from then, I think I've been so intentional about just being kind to myself, you know. But mid-20s to mid-30s was my toughest decade.
It's interesting, isn't it? And do you think some of this has got to do with you becoming a mum?
I think so. I know we were chatting earlier, and I had just never... I wasn't the kind of person, you know, you hear people say, I kept a book about how my wedding dress would look like and what my kids... No, that wasn't me. I was pretty much a tomboy. Not that they don't, and I know there's a lot of toxic, what's the word? A lot of these
perceptions
are things that I'm now working... My space of work is about not really perpetuating them. But I was such a free spirit, and I said, family is not really something I can think of now. But when it happened, I was ready. You know, I think, you know, we were like, okay, great. It's a bit sooner than we thought, but we're ready. We're happy. But I remember when I told my mom, I'm expecting, she was just like, wow. Because she knows me so well. She's like, it's okay. I'm going to try walk with you. Because she's known all along. I'm like, I don't talk about those things. That's not for me. I'll do it later. So when I had my firstborn, I worked for a little longer, then stepped back out of work because I didn't really know how to balance. And then I was just became intentional once we had my second born. I said the only way I can navigate being a parent as best as I can is making sure my sons are my friends, which sounds odd, but because of how erratic my life is and because of how much I was trying to figure myself out and how much trauma I was dealing with and trying to be a good mom, I said, you know, I'm just going to be super upfront with these kids. So we have honest conversations. They're 3 and 6. It's not like we have groundbreaking.
I love that.
Yeah. We don't have ground.
Give me the most honest conversation. I love that. To a 3-year-old.
Yeah, it's 3. So my 3-year-old is a bit zen. He's strong personality, but zen. So sometimes I'll say, really tired. You know, it's been a long day. And sometimes he has not asked me, by the way. I just offered this information. He's chilling on the bed. Maybe my firstborn's gone to bed. And I'm like, I'm really tired. Sometimes it's just a lot. What do you think I should do? And I say that because, you know, kids will just give you. So he just says, just sit. Wow. Or lie down. So it sounds odd, but it's like, be present.
No, but that simplicity from children really can sort of make you realize that, hold on a second, what am I cluttering my mind with?
Thank you. Yeah. So they've centered me. It's still, they're still toddlers. And so it's still, sometimes we fight a lot. But even today, I was telling you, they know I'm coming for this interview. They know I'll be on air. So they're like, you know, have a great show and we'll see you later. Just make sure you're home in time to put us to bed. But it's not a struggle. They're just friends.
It's
helped center me.
Do you feel that transition from mom, I know, I mean, obviously you're still their mom, mm-hmm. but where you put an emphasis on being friends has taken a lot of pressure off you from the parenting side?
I think so. And it's not... you know, because you'll see a lot of problematic relationships when a parent is just trying to be their child's BFF. And that can be, it can be a little...
Like friending them on Facebook. Yeah. My mom does that. And I'm like, we can't be friends on social media, Ma. And she comments on everything.
She comments on everything. She's your biggest fan.
Oh, bless her. Yeah, she's always been. I love that about her. But yeah, it has taken the pressure off because I was really beating myself up. You know, you're not a good enough mom. You're always so busy. These kids need you. But when I explain to them, mom's busy, mom needs to work, but I will always be there for you as much as I can. And the moment they began to see the rhythm, they kept telling me, like Huru keeps saying, Huru's my firstborn, Mali's my secondborn. For him, as long as you break it down to him, he's fine. But before then, he would have separation anxiety and he'd have a fit with whoever is around him. But when I tell him, look, I need to leave and I need to da 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 da. So now there's a rhythm where I don't get to feel so guilty anymore because it was killing me. And where they, I think, realize it's not coming from a bad place. It's not abandonment. It's just, you know.
Now, I want to move away from, you work in gender equality.
Yes, yeah.
And you were blessed with 2 sons. I mean, highlight the joke from above, but let's just, you have your work cut out for you.
This is true.
But I want to move away after the break from talk of appearance or talk of motherhood, because I don't believe that just because you identify as a woman,
yeah,
that we should be speaking about that. I will be playing a game with Janet Mbogwa, our guest, based around, all I'm going to give you is my first time. Here too.
Wake up with Davina and Fareed. Do it. You gotta get on up. The only way to wake up. Yeah. On 98.4 Capital FM. She about to go in. She likes that low end.
high for words. And where I'm at now, I'm too high for birds. Shorty, what you think about my return? Cause what he think about it ain't my concern. I ain't come for you, I came for your missus. I don't do it for the haters, I do it for the players. Well, okay, I do it for the riches. But in the meantime and in between time, shorty right there gon' get it. If she with it, if she ain't, then I know I partner down. Cause a partner throwing shots every time I turn around. And a partner bringing partners every time I come to town. I'm a G6, sir, a Maybach, girl. You can tell the chauffeur, he can park it right there. And I'ma walk up to the club upstairs. And when I come down, he can bring it back, burn.
Go in. She likes that low. Uh-oh, there she goes. Just that look all on her face. Shorty dancing like she knows she's the baddest in the place. Hey, hey, I wanna get with you. Freak, I'm filming now. Hey, so what you wanna do? Got a freak, I'm dressed on. Them newbies on her feet. And them bottles with the...
That's Snoop and Charlie Wilson with Peaches and Cream right here on your best mix of music, 98.4 Capital FM.
At what point did he think he could better 112?
That's true. That's true.
Like, Snoop, there are some things you can't do. And if you are listening, because I know you are, just you've been warned. All right, Dan Mbugua, it's time. It's game time. Game time, baby.
Why am I scared?
Now, your book that you wrote in 2019, but you published in 2020, mm-hmm. available at all good bookstores, including Textbook Center, right now.
Yeah.
Such a powerful title. My First Time. Every female listening is like, oof. It's like you've been punched in the gut. You're like, oh, God, don't tell my mom. So I would like to ask you your first time, and I'm just going to say my first time, and then I'm going to give you the descriptor. You have to just give it to me straight, okay?
Okay.
That's what she said.
Try my all best. Right. That's what she said.
They never
it's
do
too
that.
Early, too
okay.
early.
Okay. My first time in this building.
Oh, to 2003.
How are you feeling?
How was I feeling? I was so happy because I was going for it. So I was really excited to be in there.
At 19, yeah. Man.
I was calling every day. I was calling every day from Mombasa saying, you know, when will you have an opening? When will you? And then I was patched through because the receptionist at the time was like, God. And then I got, hello, John. It was Phil.
Like, right.
I know you've been calling every day. We're going to call you if we get an opening. But thank you for calling every
day. Are you
day.
A coast chick?
I'm a coast chick. Yes. Yes.
But having said that, just going back to Phil Matthews, he said this when we spoke to him last week during mm-hmm. our birthday month. Mm-hmm. He said that he had such an eye for talent. Mm-hmm. And I think it took him speaking to you once for him to say,
yeah,
come and see us, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. Because I called every day. Then eventually, after a few weeks, I get a call and it's like, it's Phil, can you come in tomorrow?
Yeah.
So that was amazing. So I came in feeling very happy.
Okay, ready? My first time feeling uncomfortable because of my gender.
Wow, because of my gender. 2015, I mean, yeah, I think I was body shamed for being pregnant on TV.
No really? Way.
Yeah, I was. And I talk about it a lot because, you know, it's a very current, real narrative right now.
Is that actually a thing, body shaming someone for being pregnant?
Yeah, they would send questions to the station saying, you know, you're too pregnant. Till today, I don't know what too pregnant is, but you're too pregnant to be on TV. Or why are you pregnant and reading us the news? I promise.
Yeah, because those two things don't go hand in hand.
They really don't. No, yeah. So I struggled with it initially, but then I became a bit of a dragon lady. For the first time, I pushed back because I was like, you're insulting womanhood, not just me.
And creating life.
And so it became a big-ish story. I remember it was on magazines and TV. It was strange. But yes, that was one of the first times that, you know, you really recognize your gender and you really recognize how you're being targeted because of your gender. So...
See, no one tells Jeff Koinange that he's put on too much weight.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? And I mean, let's be honest, he's not a young man anymore.
Right.
It is. It's appearance goes hand in hand with being a woman.
He's going to kill me for that.
I'm like Fareed. He's going to call us.
So you could say that when you're thin, you know what I mean? So.
This one is always ready for violence. Violence. Fareed Varun.
No violence.
My first time to fall in love.
Y'all just decided this is going to be the morning that
I'm not sure if these were geared for our listener or Davina's just really curious about
you. I think Davina's
you.
Like, let me just...
And she's thinking, please let it be today.
She followed me back on social media.
Yeah, but it's not the first time she's fallen in love. It wasn't when she followed you back on social media. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the two don't go hand in hand. First time I fell in love, I think I was I think I was in high school. I was finishing high school. It must have been because it was this crazy, obsessive feeling for this person that followed for the next 2-3 years. So I think that's what it was. I can't quite recall that feeling, but I know that I thought about this person every day and looked for them and wanted to be with them. So I'd say high school.
And swiftly followed by my first fail.
I've failed a fair bit. I fail forward. This is the difference. I had to learn.
That's a great way to look at it. Failing forward. I like that.
I had to. That's just how you. This is self-care and being kind to yourself and appreciating that your mental health can be affected by how you see it. So if you're like, I failed, mm-hmm. then tonight's fail forward. The first time I felt like I failed again a bit was high school. I feel like I failed in, this is going to sound so trivial, my God, when I think of little things, trying to put together the school dance because I was like the deputy head girl, house captain. I was like a sheriff with all these badges. That did feel like a fail because everything was on me. And I remember that distinct feeling of, oh my God, I failed. All eyes were on me.
Yeah.
Even moving to reports on TV that I feel the audience didn't understand, my bosses were questioning, that felt like a fail. So there's been nuggets of feeling like a failure. I just try to be like, fail forward and just try not to, you know, repeat certain things, learn from them.
And as you've gone into this phase of self-actualization, as you put it, when we started the conversation, does failing to you, because as I've gotten older, mm-hmm. and a little bit more mature in my thinking, when I fail now, it doesn't hit like it used to.
Right.
Because I've realized that, I mean, this is not the last time it's going to happen. You know what I mean? And they're going to be bigger, more monumental failures than this one. You know what
100%.
I mean?
100%. I think you've literally say what I would. It's that it just, I feel like it's preparing me for the next stage. Because I wouldn't have seen myself here a few years ago. But I think sticking to my gut, even though I felt like I was failing navigating this journey, I was like, okay, you know, you stuck to your gut. It didn't always work out. But now you are essentially doing the things you love. Every day I wake up doing what I love. So
that's incredible. And we're going to find out what exactly that is, because it's a lot of different things. Yes, in just a few minutes. You have any more?
The last one's a tough one.
Okay.
No, Devine, I'm not ready.
You're ready. You're Janet Mbugua. My first time, I didn't want to go on.
And then I'm sure I'm going to say on what, then you'll be like, just figure it out. I feel like
you do you.
The first speak your time, truth. The first time I didn't want to go on. Jeez. The first time I didn't want to go on. The first time I didn't want to go on. In my mind, I feel like that's a public space, again, because I think I've done this for many years. First time I didn't want to go on feels like the first time I didn't want to go on publicly. I'm going to have to put a pin on that, Davina, and okay. circle back.
Okay, we'll circle back to that.
Yeah.
And there was something else we're going to circle. Oh, you're going to describe yourself at the end of the work.
Yeah. I feel like you guys will come back and be like, uh-huh. Yeah. So?
We're going to save a good 20 minutes at the end of this hour so Jenna can answer those two questions. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to find out what it is exactly that you do. Because as I said before, you are a bit of an enigma. And you are, you know, I follow you on social media. I follow what you're up to. But there's so many things you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I get the feeling that they're all centered towards one greater purpose,
that's
if I'm
true.
Not mistaken.
That is true.
All right. All that coming up in just a few minutes. Plus a song just for you after the sports.
Wake up with Davina and Fareed. Do it. You gotta get on up. Woo! The only way to wake up. Yeah. On 98.4 Capital FM.
There we go. A little Whitney for Janet. I'm Every Woman at 8:45. There's a reason we're saying that and playing that. It's because you have taken on a role, Janet, as the embodiment of every woman. And I think young girls probably look at that and say, and look up to you and say that at least someone is talking about the things we go through. And not just young girls, I say women, young girls. And you know, from where I sit as a male and very male, I often look at the work you're doing on social media and I read in the press. And I wonder what kind of person actually puts other people's lives ahead of theirs to make a difference. And really, truly, when we meet such people, it's such a pleasure to meet people who actually do those things. So congratulations on all the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Even though I still don't know exactly what you do because you do so much. So that's what we want to find out now.
We're loving all these tweets. Keep them coming at 9:84 in the morning. Ruthie says, wow, it's always enlightenment when Janet speaks. From her experiences to profession, we learn. I'm a huge admirer of Janet and I believe many ladies are. You've definitely work in the space of gender equality. Mm-hmm. You've put the lives of women and girls at the forefront. Mm-hmm. What do you do and why?
Yeah, thank you both. And thank you, Ruthie. When I was a news anchor and, you know, you're broadcasting these stories every single night and it weighs, I think, for every host, I think even for you guys, because you're at the forefront of kind of narrating issues. Some of them just stuck with me. And as somebody who had privilege and a platform, hearing somebody have to resort to using chicken feathers and soil and goat hide during their period was hugely triggering for me because I couldn't fathom that. And so that stuck with me and made me ask, what can we do? And that's, I think, when the journey started. This was back in 2013, 2014. And so the foundation I formed was to say, let's give girls access to menstrual products because so many of them weren't going to school. And so that's already holding them back from competing, from thriving, because you don't go to school, your chances are lowered at just doing anything with your life a lot of the time. And so that's how simply I saw it at the time. It was, they need to go to school. They're not in school. At the time, I think it was 2.1 million girls in the country every month.
It's actually a staggering figure.
It's a staggering
figure. It's higher now, right?
It's higher.
Because of COVID, I think.
It's higher because of COVID, exactly. Yeah. The world over, it's 500 million girls and women. 500 million girls and women the world over don't have access to menstrual products. 500 million. So it's around the world. And it's extremely disruptive. It's disruptive to people's lives, to their families, to the communities. As I've done the work over the years, you realize it's not an isolated issue. And so the messaging around gender equality then kind of comes home because you're like, oh, this is what inequality is. If she's not able to go to school, if she's becoming a teen mom, and that means she's 14, 15, 16 with a child, there's basically no, it's not likely that she'll chart out a life for herself that is something she wanted or that allows her to either earn, have economic empowerment,
or where she doesn't depend wholly on someone else.
There you go. And that's the inequality. So what I do, I would say, is it's media and advocacy. I amplify inequality messaging and try to bring to the forefront what inequality looks like and means, that it's not a he versus she and us versus them, because it's a very polarizing conversation, by the way. Twitter just goes ham every time, without a doubt. But when you're out there every single day talking to different people, not just underprivileged, even people who have access are struggling with inequality and don't even know. A lot of them will say to me, oh, I didn't know that that's sexism. Oh, I didn't know that I was being...
So it's an education issue as well.
It's an education issue as well. So it's gender equality or gender equity amplification. And now with Inua Dada, initially, again, it was largely media advocacy, raising funds to some extent to buy menstrual products. And then it grew into this thing where now there's a space that I'm going to talk about in the next few days that I've been putting my heart and soul into over the last 2 years, where now we're working with women and girls in the community, even their families, to give them psychosocial support, because you realize you can't actually do intervention if someone's mind isn't right. Mm-hmm. So we've been helping them navigate their traumas with counselors, training them on reproductive health and rights, because a majority of girls were telling us the same thing. They didn't know that starting their period and pregnancy were linked. That's why so many of them are getting pregnant. They don't No one tells them.
Where's that failing, though? Where's that failing?
Education. Because they say it's education.
Is it a developing country problem? Do they not have as big of an issue in more developed parts of the world?
I think that's a really good question. It's it is, first of all, it needs to be seen as a development issue in governments. But if there's stigma and taboo around a topic, then you avoid talking about it. But that also leads to people trying to navigate it on their own. So a lot of them say, I didn't know. I wasn't told about it in school. And nobody talks to me about it at home. So what happens is I turn 14, 15. This shocking transition happens in my body that no one talked to me about. And then I'm fooling around or playing with this boy. And a few months later, I'm pregnant. Nobody has helped me draw those linkages. So
and a lot of the times they get disowned in a way, don't they? Young
times.
Ladies, when they become pregnant. It's an interesting conversation. I've often talked about addiction and men's mental health with men. Normalize that being around a dinner table, much like you're saying, normalize this conversation being around a dinner table.
It has to be around the dinner table. I know earlier this year, actually with Capital and Hive, an organization I kind of collaborate with based out of the US, we did this with Equality Now called Your Voice Matters. And that's exactly what it is. It's like your voice matters, but your action also counts. So your voice matters is about, this is not a problem that is for a select group of people. Gender-based violence, you know, like you just mentioned about the pandemic, menstrual inequality and gender-based violence just blew up during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so when people sit and say that's more of a CSO space conversation, I'm like, no, it isn't, because it's one in three women. So it can't be. It can't be a few people. And then action is what you've just said. It's those little things about normalizing the conversation over dinner, chatting with your friends about it, talking about it in the workplace, talking about it in schools. It has to be weaved into our everyday narrative so that it's not this thing when people say, let's talk about gender equality. Everyone's like, oh God, no.
There has to be a special event or organized or some sort of...
It shouldn't be limited to Women's Day and Day of the Girl. It should be throughout.
Have you seen a shift since you started this work? Have you seen a shift in the conversation?
100%. The biggest shift I've seen is more male allyship.
That's great.
It's really great. Yeah, and it's not contrived or performative. Sometimes. I think, people are trying to figure out their lane. It may come with some of those traits, but it's genuine allyship, because I think a lot of men were telling me they realize it's not just the women in their lives that are affected. They are, by extension, affected. So
sure. And the kids as well.
And
the other kids.
So yeah, they started investing in the knowledge around it. So that's the biggest shift, one of the biggest shifts I've seen. The other one is Menstrual Hygiene Day is every year on the 28th of May. Many years ago, in 2014, 2015, there was just a handful of us talking about it. This year, I was on almost like several stations on prime time in breakfast show, and I was saying the fact that you're having these conversations round the clock this year is one of the biggest shifts.
There was a huge presence on social media.
On social. So that it works. It shows you that the amplification and the advocacy actually gets through to people, and you create a safe space where people are allowed to try and understand the issues and try and understand what they can do. And so that's, I think, I'm like, I don't know if I've answered Fareed in terms of what I do. I am a person who puts social justice issues on the map. I use my platform. I collaborate with people, not just regionally and locally, but globally. I was part of the Generation Equality Forum this year, which was marking, I think, 26 years since the Beijing Women's Conference. So working with everyone from United Nations Foundation to Melinda Gates and all of these folks who are at the forefront of these issues. So that's who I am. I'm an amplifier, because I realize
that's
the more...
That's a great description of you. Amplifier.
It's like it took you 20 minutes, but there we
are. I'm in absolute awe of I mean, there is literally 24 hours in a day and 365 days in a year, and you do more in a day than most people do in a month, it sounds like.
I just also realize people do their own thing in their own way. You'll find them doing little things that they don't think is making a difference. But I'm like, no, it is. As long as you just want to
She's trying to make us feel better.
Can you be my mom?
She's just trying to make you and I
for
feel
example,
better. This little thing we do makes a difference.
No, for example, the youth advocates we work with at Inuadada, when they say things like, before, you know, me being able to have this conversation at home with my friends has made me feel like I'm making a difference. And I'm like, but it is, because you're at least scaling the message. It's getting through. It'll get through to someone. So I'm an amplifier. I convene. I love convening people. I like bringing everyone together and talking about social justice issues and just making everyone realize you can do it in your own little way. You don't have to have a foundation or a center, which I know can be daunting, but that's not how I started. I started by just kind of doing it in my own way.
Well, you do have a foundation and you do have a center. We're going to be telling you about that right after this. And we're also going to be telling you how you can help Janet Mbugua achieve all of her amplification.
Yay. Thank you. Oh, this song.
It'll all be over. One day we're going to get so high.
There we go, the Lighthouse family. Special request for Janet at 3 minutes to nine, and blown away. I gotta share this. You are also just a regular girl, because I went out to get coffee. Esther's bringing it for you. I explained half coffee, half cream.
Look at how difficult this is for him.
And making half a cup.
Yeah. Come on, male.
There was like steam coming out of her ears. As I walked in, they were talking about Hailey Bieber's fingernails. So
no, her hand tattoos.
Her hand tattoos.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, the conversation shifted dramatically when I left.
We can be ourselves now.
Farida's gone, you know? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Farid, we may look and talk and act like absolute superwomen, but we are just regular people.
We really are.
Yeah, you're welcome, though. You're welcome.
It's great to emphasize that.
I'm in the presence of greatness.
You are, Farid. Now, we are in the presence of greatness. Janet Mbugua doing so much work. Please tell us how we can support your work in supporting our young girls and women.
Thank you for that. So the center is something that I'll be talking about in the next few days, because it's, you know, as I mentioned, it's something that I've envisioned for a long time, which is this space where people can find healing, where people can get access to information, knowledge. Huru the other day was like, what are you going to do for boys? So I've told him, you'll come up with that program.
Nice.
So eventually it's supposed to extend to families. It's almost like changing communities one girl at a time.
Yeah.
Uplifting communities one girl at a time. So we're focusing on girls, women, and then the guardians in their space. So how to support it is, it needs a lot to keep it going. I was never able to stand in front of a microphone and, I saw Esther when I was really young. It's been hard for me to come in front of my microphone and say, we need to raise funds, etc. But now, having done the work, it does need support. It needs people to come by and offer to sometimes volunteer to just spend a day and maybe watch some of the little ones who come with their moms, or help in kind of navigating the menstrual health workshops, like these different ways. So people can volunteer. People can bring resources in, because a lot is needed, a lot in terms of products for whether it's menstrual health, products for their babies. Psychosocial support needs counselors who come with expenses. So it's resources right now. We're going to go into a lot of fundraising to just make sure that the impact can be scaled, because it is working. It's making a difference. I'm there almost every day. And it's always so great to hear them say, before I came for psychosocial support sessions, I can tell the difference over the last few weeks that I'm actually confronting and navigating my trauma. And they didn't even know that that's something Incredible. That they needed to do. So I'm really happy about it. I'm nervous as heck because it's like a little baby. So that's how people can support. Follow us on inuadadafoundation.org on our website, and you'll get a lot more information on
Incredible.
The same.
Yes. Aww. Incredible. What a pleasure to have you back here.
Please Thank come you. Back.
In better I'll circumstances come. Yeah. than the last time.
Yeah. I'll barge in next time, even without invite. I'll be like, Davina,
fine. Just
You say that
show
now.
Up. No, I'm serious.
It gets
I'm serious.
Irritating.
Yeah. I mean, you're there. You want to read the news anyway. It's what you used to do anyway.
I should. Yunia's here.
Yunia's like,
By the way, it's been so great seeing Yunia and Chep and Esther and Laban and all these incredible people who saw me as a, you know, when I see it's amazing. And Fareed. Fareed doesn't know how much of an influence he had on me media wise. And I'm like, he's probably going to fade the mic now.
I'm totally going to fade the mic.
He was one of my bosses. So there we go.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
And you survived. So well done.
And she's a better person for it.
Yeah, go. It's been a pleasure, you two. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for everything.
Always so nice to see you.